This week on the show, Boston is a hockey town again, MLB free agency finally comes to a close, and we flip the calendar and look towards spring. All that and more coming up, Calling It starts right now. Welcome into another edition of the Calling It podcast. Alex Barth joined by Alex Lebowitz. We're recording this on March 1st at about 1 o'clock. We're powered, as always, by CLNS Media. Lebowitz, how you doing today?
I'm doing well. It's Friday. Work week's done. Got the weekend ahead of me, so I'm a happy man.
So I'm very glad we waited until today to record. We've been recording on Thursdays, but I had work yesterday, and we would have missed an excellent Bruins game last night. We actually would have missed the Celtics Thursday night as well if we recorded yesterday during the day, and we would have missed Bryce Harper signing. So I don't know, but calling a curse, taking a big loss there.
Evidently, it seems that way. Fortunately, we wait till the end of the week. I think this is a sign. We should probably usually wait till Fridays.
I'd agree with that. I agree. I think that's a good call.
Yeah, these news dumps and these big stories, it's always middle of the week, late week. And I think it sets up the weekend nicely. So
last week we recorded on Thursday. We all know what happened on Friday. That's the thing, though. If we record on Friday for the news dumps, it's got to be a little later.
Oh, yeah.
What time did actually, Kraft broke early in the day last week.
It was like 10:30. It's funny because we had the whole the show I do in the mornings. We had that about a half hour after we went off air. Robert Kraft arrested on soliciting prostitution charges.
Right. So. And that was on Friday. So you had to wait till Monday to talk about it.
Yeah, we did. But it gave me some time to digest the information, the news, and try to come up with a spin.
All right, let's get into the more recent news, though. Just with Kraft, we're not really going to touch on it just because the story's still evolving a lot, and we only do the show once a week. So if we talk about it today, you know, by the time I get this posted in 4 hours, something will probably change. So we're aware of it. You can check out the WCAP Morning Show and Lowell for Lebowitz's takes, all of some takes with Patriots CLNS. But we're going to kind of put that on the back burner here just because we want to talk about what's more immediate. We only get to do the show once a week. If we did this daily, it's probably something we dive a little more into. But I don't want people to think we are ignoring it. It's just kind of the nature of the show. I want to start, Lebowitz, with the Boston Bruins, who last night just handed the lunch pail to the Tampa Bay Lightning, who some are calling the Golden State Warriors of the NHL. 4 goals, held them to just one, which was really garbage time. I don't know if you can say garbage time exists in hockey, but it was sort of a garbage time goal. 3 goals in 88 seconds. My phone was blowing up last night with friends texting me who aren't, you know, they're the people who, oh, I watch hockey when the playoffs start. It was February. It was still February. And these people are texting me, I'm all in on the Bruins. Ride or die, beast time, let's go. So this team has totally captivated Boston. I think it's safe to say Boston is a hockey town right now. For all we heard about the Celtics all summer, it's the Bruins' time to shine.
I agree, and it's not by default, which would usually be the case, or a lot of times be the case. And you'd think that, given the way the Celtics have played, but the Bruins, number two in the Eastern Conference right now, and they've been on a complete tear, beating the Lightning. And I understand it was the second game for the Lightning coming off a back-to-back, but still, they're riding a 10-game win streak. They're playing really good hockey, and the Bruins, they demolished them. And I understand it took till the third period to really blow the doors open. But still, they're playing well on all cylinders. And it's a team that is just really cohesive. And they're looking like they have as good of a shot as anyone to make a challenge for that Stanley Cup.
They absolutely – and that's kind of the nature of hockey. And I mentioned the Warriors of the NHL. I don't – by saying that, I mean they're an elite offensive team. They're as good an offensive team as we've seen in multiple years. They are a wagon. They are probably the best team in the league. But I don't know that – the thing with the Warriors is we knew going into the year that they were going to win the title. I don't know that that exists in hockey, just the nature of the sports.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's specifically a basketball thing, and that comes down to the fact that you have 5 guys in the court at a time. And I know you have 5 skaters on the ice at a time, but you have so many lines, and it's not continuous like it is with in the same way as basketball. So – when you have the star power that a team like the Warriors have, like a team like the Heat had back in the day, yeah, you're going to be the favorites and people are pretty much going to write off anyone else. And beyond that, you get to the playoffs, you already know who that Eastern Conference Finals or the Western Conference Finals matchup is going to be prior to the season, at the very least. You can't say that at all with hockey. It's always unpredictable. And, you know, at any time, a goalie can get hot or a team can start, as I said, hitting on all cylinders. Yeah, the Tampa Bay Lightning right now, I think they're 15 points above the Bruins in the standings right now. But that does not mean anything, because when you get into the postseason, it's cliche, but it's a new season. And I don't think that's true for any other sport more than it is for hockey.
So just looking at the Bruins schedule real quick up ahead here, they actually have four more in a row at home. They're in the middle of a six-game homestand. They got the Devils, the Hurricanes, the Panthers, and the Senators. Then they go on the road. It gets a little tougher, the Penguins and the Blue Jackets. But the thing that's different, and this is what I'm going to be interested to see, and the difference between basketball and hockey is when a basketball team starts playing their best, they kind of stay there, right? I don't think teams are as streaky as much in basketball. With hockey, the Bruins are coming off a long road trip. And then that game against the Lightning, I wouldn't be surprised if I don't want to say slip up here over the next couple of games, but I wouldn't be surprised if you know, they take a couple teams take them to overtime that maybe shouldn't. Maybe they drop a game or two here or there. I just hope the attention and the enthusiasm doesn't go away, because I could see that happening. I mean, they went through, again, a brutal road trip and then coming back home to face the Lightning. I wouldn't be surprised to see a little downturn. And I'm not saying that's a bad thing, because in hockey, those hot streaks are so come and go. They're not going to maintain this all the way to the playoffs. It's not going to happen. It's not realistic. The effort they're playing with right now, I'd like to see them not necessarily cool off, but you know, you don't want them to take a downturn come the beginning of April. You kind of want them to have some bugs to figure out now. And then when Pasternak comes back, that's when you kind of hope they make that final push and start going on that final run to carry them to the playoffs. Maybe I'm just being a pessimist. I wouldn't be surprised if there's a week or two of, you know, the level they've been playing at is so high. I don't know. For them to maintain that through the playoffs, they'd have to play that way for another four straight months. I just don't see it.
Yeah, I mean, hockey can be a streaky sport, but you got to play to win. And the thing is, they're coming off of a road trip. You talk about being on a homestand. They're coming off a road trip, West Coast mostly. They won four straight games out there and then lost to a red-hot St. Louis Blues in a shootout. So they're playing well. Now they're at home. You think that they take advantage of this, and it would just leave them in a good position standings wise. So that you have, you know, a decent matchup come the postseason. That said, I think that stuff just kind of happens organically. I don't think you can plan to kind of take your foot off the gas a little bit. It's, you play it by ear. You try to, you know, if it isn't broken, you don't fix it, and you try to just play consistently and fundamentally sound. And you mentioned something that's going to become not an issue, but it's going to be something that maybe throws a wrench into this chemistry a little bit, and that's Pasternak coming back, which isn't going to be for a couple more weeks at least, given the last update that we got. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out, and a lot of it depends on the goaltending situation. It seems like, although Halak's playing well, you got Tuukka Rask, who is your guy, who's starting to really pull it together. So it really comes down to that. It comes down to just, you know, having that continuity as a team, having that chemistry as a team, and right now it's working for them. It's just trying to make sure you don't lose that spark. There's going to be ups and downs throughout the season, as there are in any season. You just want to be in a decent position come postseason time.
All right, speaking of the downs, the Celtics. We've got to touch on the Boston Celtics, because, like, they're a mess. Let's be honest. They are an absolute hot mess right now. It's gotten to the point, Lebowitz, you said to me before the show, and I totally agree with you, the post game is more entertaining than the game itself, because you want to hear who's blaming who, who's dodging what questions. Brad just kind of teeter around the point, not really say anything. The post games have become must watch. You can turn the game on in the fourth quarter, get the gist of how they lost, and then just watch the blame fest after the game.
It's clear that there's a massive division in that locker room, and I think it's beyond repair. I've said it last week. I think I said it the week before that. There's some serious personality issues within that locker room, and you have a guy, Brad Stevens, who just cannot handle it. And I said that I enjoy the postseason, the press conference, rather, post-game press conferences, simply because you already know what's going to be said. Brad Stevens, oh, you know, we want to go out there. We don't want to lose like this. We want to play better. We got to work on this, that, and the other. And then you have Marcus Smart saying, we're not working together as a team. And then Kyrie Irving coming out and saying, well, that's Marcus's opinion. It's like there's no accountability from certain players in that locker room. And that, to me, is the most frustrating part. And it comes back to Kyrie Irving and the fact that he is the guy. And right now, they have zero chemistry, zero trust in one another. And if you're going to be the guy, you have to take accountability for when your team, the team that you are the guy for, starts playing like dog crap, which they have. He is directly to blame to an extent for the downfall of the Celtics team this season. And I haven't seen him take full accountability for his role in the erosion of this locker room. The comparison's been made plenty of times. It's David Price-esque, except it's heightened to an even more extreme level, simply given the fact that Kyrie Irving's way more important to this team than David Price was to the 2017 Red Sox.
So one last point on the Celtics, and then we'll wrap this first segment up here. Let's say that Kyrie goes to Danny Ainge, right? And remember, they were talking after, I believe it was the Toronto loss, when the locker room opened up, Danny Ainge was at Kyrie's locker. And we know how much Kyrie learned from LeBron James and wants to be LeBron James. Let's say Kyrie goes to Danny and says, you know what, Danny? I will re-sign with you come July 1st, as long as Brad Stevens is not the coach. What do you do if you're – it's not the most unrealistic thing to talk about. I could see it happening. I don't think it'll happen, but I could see it happening. And then if you're Danny Ainge, what do you do in that situation? Because Brad was talked about for years as the best asset the Celtics have, and they've invested a lot in this guy. And as much as they're trying to build this rebuild around Kyrie Irving or Jason Tatum, they've also tried to build it around Brad Stevens. But do you let a top 10 player in the league walk over a head coach in a sport where coaches really don't matter? I think we need to start looking at this, because I would not be surprised if that's a crossroads, especially if they continue to play like this down the stretch, if that's a crossroads they have to face. If it means Kyrie Irving and, by that extent, Anthony Davis, can you fire Brad Stevens?
No, I wouldn't. I would let Kyrie Irving walk for sure.
Man, if you know that Kyrie's going to stay and then you can go get Anthony Davis, you can find a guy to coach them.
Well, Brad Stevens, who, say what you want about him, he hasn't been great at handling this locker room. He's still a top five coach in the NBA. That's my honest opinion from what I've seen since he took over at that position.
But would you say that Luke Walton is a top five coach in the NBA? Not Luke Walton, sorry. Would you say Kerr probably is a top five coach? I don't know. I just don't think
Steve
Kerr is
definitely, yeah.
Yeah, I just don't think the coach matters in this sport.
Well, it's more than just
Luke,
it's
Luke,
more.
They won. They didn't they go undefeated for a month? The Warriors with Luke Walton as the coach when Kurt has back surgery.
Oh, sure. I'm not saying it's not even just about Brad Stevens. It's about the fact that you have a guy in Kyrie Irving who's laying blame on Brad Stevens for the downfall of this team.
Is he wrong?
Partially, yeah. I mean, the fact that he's not taking any blame himself proves that he doesn't really understand the gravity of his role in this situation.
I would think Brad's just as much, probably not as much as fault as he is, but Brad's second, there's nobody close at third. Those guys are 1A and 1B.
Well, the unfortunate reality in the NBA is that you have to be able to control personalities in the locker room because so many of the players have enormous egos. And that's my biggest turnoff with the NBA personally. But Kyrie Irving is someone who's not going to allow you to win by yourself. And in this hypothetical, I don't think Anthony Davis is a shoo-in to sign with the Celtics. So if it's Kyrie Irving stays or Brad Stevens stays, and it's Kyrie Irving giving you that ultimatum, let him go. I don't like him as a leader. I don't want to root for him as a player, regardless of if he stays in the Celtics or not. It's just annoying to watch. And I think Brad Stevens will learn from this season and learn from this experience. He's a great basketball mind.
That's not what being a coach in the NBA is about.
But it is partially. It is. It absolutely plays a role. And when you do have young guys behind Kyrie Irving, I'm not saying you can afford to lose a guy like that, But the rebuild process wouldn't entirely start from zero. You'd still have assets, and I think Ainge is still a draw, and I think Brad Stevens could potentially still be a draw. I just don't like the idea of a player calling shots personally, whether it's Kyrie Irving or LeBron James. I don't either, but
welcome to the NBA. That's just the reality of it.
I mean, you make it's a good question. It's a good hypothetical because Danny Ainge has been dealing with Kyrie Irving with kid gloves. He's been coddling the guy. Yeah, and you kind of have to because he's so damn fragile. Again, this is the most frustrated I've ever been watching a non-Red Sox Boston team. And Kyrie Irving is probably my least favorite Boston athlete of my lifetime at this point. So I don't want him to stay regardless right now. We're recording this March 1st, 2019. We can keep this in the archives. If he goes into if he has some type of postseason run where he completely goes off and takes a
selfie. David Price-esque.
Yeah, exactly. Although that was this past season, 2017, he wasn't doing that. But if he has that run in the postseason and takes the Celtics to the finals, I'll eat my words gladly. But that will not take away from the fact that he plays an integral role in the demise of this regular season Celtics team and the fact that they have still not won a game since the All-Star break.
Look, it's all about superstar power in this league. I remember a couple years ago when the Celtics didn't trade for DeMarcus Cousins, and there was a report that part of the reason is that Brad didn't want him. And DeMarcus Cousins is a bit of a head case, I know that. But in order to coach in the NBA and win in the NBA, you have to be able to handle those guys. And I think Brad just was afraid to do it, knew he couldn't do it, whatever. That's going to be a problem. If Brad's going to hang around, he needs to learn to bow down to the superstars. I'm not saying it's right. Coaches shouldn't have to do that. But if you want to win in the NBA, you do. And that's just the reality of it.
Well,
so,
do you think Brad Stevens is being too soft in this situation, or do you think he is not bowing down?
I think he's just taking a back seat and let whatever happen. Bow down might not be the right word. I think he's totally just bowed out because he doesn't want to put his foot down. But and here's so he's just fading into the woodwork, but which isn't right either. He needs to put his foot down and take back control of his locker room if it's not too late to do so.
And I agree. Say what you want about Doc Rivers, overrated coach as he's been. I mean, I think it's pretty fair to call him that.
No, but he could handle personalities.
Not only that, he was the boss. You had Kevin Garnett on that team. You had Paul Pierce, Rajon Rondo, some really Kendrick Perkins, Glenn Davis, ridiculously strong personalities. But you had a guy, Doc Rivers, and I think given the fact that he's a former player in the NBA himself helps, but you have a guy in Doc Rivers who had control of that locker room, who was the alpha, for lack of a better term, and because of that, that team thrived. I agree with you. I think Brad Stevens has taken such a hands-off approach, and maybe for some teams that works. For the Warriors, that works because they have so much talent, it doesn't really matter. No, for the Celtics, it does not work because you don't have the leadership within that roster. Kyrie Irving is not a good leader. There really isn't a good leader on that team.
Brad just wants to be about the basketball. That's all. He wants to draw up ATO plays and think of offensive sets and this and that. He doesn't want to be a general. He doesn't want to be a taskmaster. He just wants to do the basketball. And in the past, I think he had an assistant and a guy like Walter McCarty who could maybe handle some of that for him. Walter's not here anymore. And I think Brad's just focused on the basketball aspect of it, isn't focused on the locker room aspect of it, and that's hurting him. I'll tell you this. If for one reason or another Brad Stevens isn't the head coach next year, Doc Rivers should be the first call Danny Ainge makes. I believe the Celtics with Doc Rivers as the head coach this year might not be in the situation.
But is there a generational problem here? Because we saw what he did with strong personalities in Los Angeles. And a lot of those guys did not like him at all. And obviously Austin Rivers played a role in that. At least those are some of the reports.
Can
a coach like that thrive in an environment like what the league's in right now?
I think he's a guy Kyrie would respect. He has a ring. He played in the league. He has a ring as a coach too. And I just think those Lakers teams, roster wise, had some flaws to them that, you know, it's tough to compare anybody to the 07 Celtics, but I think those Clippers teams, pardon me, had some flaws to them that this Celtics team wouldn't necessarily have. All right. We're like 20 minutes on this segment. So, and I don't see the Celtics kind of flipping the switch anytime soon. We'll have plenty more time to bash Brad and bash Kyrie. I do want to talk about MLB free agency and Bryce Harper signing yesterday, a big fat contract. We'll discuss that on the other side. This is Callin' It, powered by CLNS.
Callin' It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
Welcome back to Callin' It. Alex Barth and Alex Lovewitz with you, recording on a Friday, the day after Bryce Harper signs a 13-year, $330 million deal with the Philadelphia Phillies. Lovewitz, let's start here. That contract's going to expire in 2032. That's not a real year. Like, it's just, that's, did you do the thing where you think about how old you'll be when that contract expires? It's depressing.
Yeah, I'm going to be an actual adult by then. Yikes.
That's just like, rough. I never planned on anything for 2032. I just never thought we'd get there.
My favorite take is that at the end of the contract, it will get a bar mitzvah.
You're right. It will. Although I will say, just kind of initial impression, I do think it's a little weird that there's no outs, no trade clause. I mean, he's stuck there. And that's a lot of pressure in a city that really cares. But this is a good deal for the Phillies. You look at the AAV, it's not even top 10 all time. It's 24.5, which is a lot, but that's not bad. Frankly, 24.5 for the first half of that contract, assuming Harper keeps doing what he's doing, is pretty good. And yeah, 39 years old, you'll be paying him a little more, but first of all, who knows if they'll still be baseball in 13 years? The NL honestly will probably have the DH at that point, so you won't have to worry about him in the field. It's really, and they can extend it. They can Bobby Bonilla it. That was my favorite take, actually, is that Bobby Bonilla will still be getting paid 4 years after the Bryce Harper contract ends, which is just nuts. But no, I thought this was a relatively good deal for the Phillies. I think the length is a little ridiculous, but it was probably Harper went in with the dollar amount he wanted. He wanted to be the highest paid in terms of guaranteed money ever, and he got that. And the Phillies said, all right, if you want to be paid that much, you have to be willing to space it out so we can absorb it. And that's what they did. And I think that's where that absurd yearage comes from. But again, 24.5 for that guy, at least for the next half decade or so, that's a good deal. Then again, the Orioles paying Chris Davis, I think it's like 26 a year for a 10-year deal. And he hit 160 last year. So we'll see.
I mean, it could absolutely come back to bite him in the ass, the Phillies, that is. But Bryce Harper is obviously a better talent than Davis. I'll say this. I feel like you're seeing free agency in the MLB evolve very rapidly. We saw it last year a little bit with guys like JD Martinez not getting the deals that they wanted. Guys like Bryce Harper this season and Manny Machado waiting really long into the offseason, really into spring training to sign their contracts. Then you have someone like Aaron Hicks who signed a 70-year, $70 million deal, and now Bryce Harper, 13 years, $330 million. So I think these teams are trading off job security for salary for job security and having the longevity and having to be able to know that I'm set. This is my contract. This is the guy's contract. This is going to be the rest of Bryce Harper's career in all likelihood. And the reality is, in a decade, $25 million a year is going to be more like $15 million
a year. Right, and that's the other thing is with inflation, that's going to end up being a pretty good deal. And you brought up something with the job security there. And this is something that actually I saw encouraging. I didn't see many people talking about yesterday. You've seen the movie Basketball, right?
Of course. Great movie.
So the opening scene talking about, and it's kind of funny how they nailed it, 20 years ago now, how some of these things are really still major problems in sports. That, I mean, look at the NBA. Superstars jump from team to team to team year after year, and you can never really embrace the guys who you root for because you never know when they're going to go. I would be told I'd sign more guys to 13-year deals. Keep guys in the same uniform for extended periods of time. It's good for the sport. The fans enjoy it. That's encouraging to me to see something like that. I would love to see a guy like make Mookie Betts a Red Sox for life, right? We used to use that term jokingly. A guy in a contract year puts together some good games. Oh, sign him up for life. Mm-hmm. Do it. Make Mookie Betts a Red Sox for life. And it helps the team. Like I talked about, Mookie Betts right now is probably looking at least $350 million. It's probably going to be closer to $400 million. So if you're the Red Sox and you know you have to pay him that dollar amount, stretch it out over 15 years. Just do it. Make him a member for life. Yeah, it'll bite you a little bit at the end of the contract, but it's so far down the road that the monetary hit's not going to be that bad. And that's great for marketing. People are afraid to buy jerseys nowadays because they don't know how long the players are going to be there. Do you know how many Red Sox jerseys, how many Mookie Betts jerseys the Red Sox would sell if they signed him to a 15-year contract?
I don't know if I'm sold on the fact that this is good for baseball. I don't know if it's a sustainable thing. And it just seems kind of ridiculous. And my initial reaction.
Well, let me just say that only applies to the superstars, right? The Red Sox don't need to be signing guys like Steve Pierce to 15-year contracts or, you know, better than Ryan Brazier. I'm trying to, like, Xander Bogaerts. Xander Bogaerts is not a guy who I would say that applies to. This is, you know, guys who are top 10, maybe top 15 players in the league.
But is Bryce Harper that?
Contracts. Yeah, I'd say so.
I don't know if he is.
In terms of marketability, just the guy that he was coming up through high school and college and all that, he's probably 14 or 15. So let me say this too. I know I'm putting a bunch of caveats on what I just said. Yeah. This only applies to hitters. You can't pay a pitcher. You cannot sign a pitcher for 15 years.
No.
Pitchers don't play that long. So it only applies to guys who are elite players and only applies to hitters. Bryce Harper's a top 15 hitter in the league.
Yeah, I think I'd agree with that. I just don't know if he's worth 13 years.
But that's the point of the contract. It's very team. He's worth 7 or 8, and the deal's going to be team friendly for 7 or 8, and then it's going to be to Harper's advantage for the rest of it. That's the deal that Dustin Pedroia is on, right? That's kind of how they work these deals now, but they do it over 8 years. Now they're just making them longer.
Yeah, it's a gamble. I mean, it's a gamble. That's the reality of it. But it is a good move for the Phillies. It's just odd. I'm just kind of shocked by it, and it's hard to kind of decipher. Is this good for the MLB? Is this good for the Phillies? I think it's good for the Phillies. Is it good for the league? It's good for Bryce Harper.
I think it's good for the because it gives him, first of all, it got attention, which baseball always needs attention, and he might be the face now. The guy, the highest paid athlete of all time, the guy on the $13 million deal. I'd say that makes him the face of the league, not Trout, not Betts. I would say because of that deal, Harper is now the face of baseball.
Well, I think he's always been overrated. I think he's always been overexposed because he is a personality, a bit of a douchebag, in my opinion. But so I think he's always kind of had that. I don't know if this is going to make him the face of the league. If it does, it's simply because of his personality combined with his talent rather than just his talent. Because Mike Trout is you know, boring as can be.
Right.
And maybe Betts can be someone who breaks that barrier and kind of surpasses Harper in that sense. But I think it's setting some weird precedent, and it's definitely changing the market. So again, I go back to the Aaron Hicks 7 years, $70 million. That guy's not a superstar. He's a great player. He's a solid outfielder. But he has that job security. And then you have almost double the years for a guy like Harper. You know, is this going to be the new norm? And is that something that, you know, as a fan, I will personally like? I don't know. I'll say this. Looking at it from a Mookie Betts perspective, as a Red Sox fan, I would be more than happy if they signed him to 10 years, 10 plus years. 13, a little over the top. But if the figures are right, if the annual set, the salary's right, fine, do it. Because the trade-off's going to be worth it. It's just such an odd move. Again, I'm more shocked than anything because this is only a thing that you see in baseball. And even then, this is unprecedented.
So I got to do some quick math here. Hang on 1 second. How would you feel about a $27 million a deal for Mookie Betts?
$27 million a year?
Yeah.
I think that'd be great for the Red Sox. How many years are you talking?
15 years, $400 million. That's what I'm looking at if I'm Mookie Betts right now.
He'd be 41 by the end of that.
Yep. And look at the history of Boston Athletics with 40-year-old athletes. Chara, Ortiz. I'm all in.
Well, he'd be older than that because he's not signing that that contract wouldn't take effect until next year, right? Or the year after?
Yeah, they could have it take effect after this season, I think.
Okay.
It depends on how they write it.
But right now the Red Sox are over the luxury tax, so I don't think they do that. So he'd be 42 by the end of that contract, and I don't like the idea of paying a 42-year-old guy who's not only going to be 42, but an undersized 42-year-old guy. We see.
But who knows if there's still going to be baseball when he's 42? It's like, okay, when you're playing Madden, right? And you have a franchise. This is or Madden. Let me use the show for example, because I can't play it because it's not on Xbox, which is the stupidest thing. And I always get really pissed off about that this time of year. But I can't play the show. But I know how video game franchises work. Right. Let's say you have a franchise on the show and you're trying to win a World Series, but you're playing the show 18, right? The show 19 with Bryce Harper on the cover comes out in 2 days. This is the last offseason you're going to have. Just give the guy stupid money and it doesn't matter because you're going to be playing the show 19 in a couple days. That's kind of what this contract felt like to me. And I think the Phillies know baseball is going to look wildly different by the time this contract is up, that it may not affect them the way we think it will here 13 years earlier. And one last name I want to get to. I know there's more takes, and we can get into them throughout the season, but we're going long on the show today because there's so much to talk about. I said free agency was over. I shouldn't have said that because there is one more big name that's out there that hasn't signed.
Craig Kimbrel.
And that's Craig Kimbrel. And the word from his camp is he's not lowering his dollar value. He's totally fine pulling a Le'Veon Bell and sitting the year out, which I just think would be stupid. Just sign, Craig. Go get the 1 year, $17 million deal you know you can get. You're not going to get the job security you want. Just go do that, get paid, prove it, and then next year you can really get the big deal. Based on what he did in the playoffs, nobody's going to give him what he's asking for. And he needs to fire his agent. Because if this is his agent telling him to sit this out and all that, it's just bad advice.
Yeah, hire Boris. Like, seriously. I mean,
he can't sit out a year after the performance he had last year in the playoffs. That's just going to leave way too many questions.
Especially when you're a 31-year-old closer who relies on power pitching and pitching hard. Like, your whole thing is the strength of your arm and your ability. The older you get, obviously, the worse you're going to get at baseball, unless you evolve. But it's not, he doesn't have the skill set to evolve. He relies on throwing hard and balancing it out with that knuckle curve. When he loses the velocity on that fastball, he loses his ability to be a top end closer in the MLB. So that would be a horrible mistake. I think he came into this offseason too eager, and given the way things have transpired, he never evolved and was like, you know what, maybe the market's different than it was a few years ago. You can't give a 30-year-old closer, 31, whatever he is, year old closer, a 6-year deal worth a substantial amount of money. He's just not worth it. I don't know if it's a prove-it contract. I think he's probably gotten offers that are in the ballpark of fair. And if you counter with something and get a 4-year deal for the with the salary that you think is appropriate, you can pull the trigger and do that. But I think he's too set on having those years, that job security. And that might be the new wave.
Yeah, it might be. I'm trying to pull up here David Meter. I'm trying to see who else he represents. It's, tough to find those lists, but maybe find a new agent, Craig. That's all we're saying. All right. Like I mentioned earlier, we flipped the calendar from February to March. Good, bad. How are y'all feeling about that? We'll talk about it on the other side. This is Callin' It, powered by CLNS.
Callin' It is brought to you by American Broadcast Coaches, training the next generation of media talent and communicators. For more information, check out AmericanBroadcastCoaches.com.
It must be the first of the month, new billboard day.
Welcome back to Callin' It. Friday, March 1st, Alex Barth along with Alex Leibowitz. Happy March 1st of the month, new billboard day.
New billboard day?
Yeah, they changed the billboards. You've never seen that clip from The Simpsons?
I don't think so.
I'm going to have to bump in with that clip when I cut this up.
Okay, do that.
It's the clown, the episode where Homer goes to clown college.
Okay.
Look it up when we're done. All right, so it is March 1st, which means there were a bunch of tweets this morning about people lamenting that we are now in the worst month of the year. And I say they are all wrong. And that's not just full disclosure. My birthday is in March, but I'm not a big birthday guy. I can remove that. That is not why I say March is not the worst month of the year. In fact, it might be one of the better ones.
Yeah, I think, I don't know if it's one of the better, it might be. February is clearly the worst, though. I mean, it's not even a conversation. And right. if you have the thought that it's anything but February, I mean, you're just wrong. You're wrong and probably dumb.
So let me throw this. I know the Super Bowl's in February. I want to throw this caveat on. That is not like there's 13 months. It's January, Super Bowl week, February, March, April, May, etc. February starts the day after the Super Bowl.
Right? I agree.
Because during, especially for people in New England, you don't know what day it is, what month it is, what year it is when during the Patriots playoffs. And then the Super Bowl happens and you just snap into the worst month of the year.
It's and that I think that helps make it the worst month, because it's like football season's over, which is the most entertaining sport to watch. And you have to deal with a month of waiting for baseball and being in the dog days of both the NHL and NBA season. There's right. nothing going on. Nothing. And my birthday again,
it's dark. It's like the days are the shortest of any time of the year.
Yeah, it's 4 o'clock. It's pitch blackout. My birthday again. I probably said this already, but my birthday is in February. I like my birthday. I like celebrating it with families, with my family and friends. But with the exception of that, it's a brutal day. It's a brutal holiday. The only consolation when you're younger is you would have the week off. You would have like a winter break, a week vacation right. in February, which that's was only, a nice consolation.
That's only Massachusetts or a local thing too. Most places they just because we have the week in February and the week in April. Most places just get 1 week in March and that's it.
Yeah, but then they end the year, the school year, a week earlier, which right. is nice too. So yeah, I mean March is I like March because you get into spring training. That's when you start to see Chris Sale get on the mound and throw right. David Price. Although they haven't,
you might yet. Even like this year opening day is March 28th.
So you have opening day too, and then March Madness, which goes into April, I believe. So it starts one of the greatest tournaments in sports, and it's also a transition month. You're going from winter to spring, and I know that last March it was brutal. We had those four massive snowstorms.
March 20th, first day of spring.
There you go. And then also, a week from Sunday, the clocks move up. So that's we right. have longer days. So
that's actually a negative for me because – it means I have to get up even earlier.
It's a negative for you.
Fair. To morning people, maybe it's not so bad. I will concede that as a negative. But you mentioned transition month. There was always, you know, when I was in school, even through college, there's this run where, you know, the beginning of March, sure, maybe is not the best. It's very February-esque. The worst month is really the last 2 weeks of February and the first 2 weeks of March. If you had to put together the worst 4 weeks. But then there's this run where spring training really ramps up. And then, like, yeah, spring training gets old relatively quickly, but you get like 2 weeks of spring training games. And then, boom, it's March Madness. And then that runs you up to opening day, which takes you to the NFL draft. And then it's summer. And it's just bang, 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 just like that. There you go. So, yeah, that transition month, at least, you know, from a sports fan's point of view, you start to get going again, and then actually I missed one after the NFL draft because summer's not really till June. NHL and NBA playoffs start, and then it's the summer. So absolutely, I think March is a very underrated month. It's one of the best. If you want to talk about worst, I think it's February. In local, like I love the summer, I really do. The end of August is depressing.
The end of
August can be a bummer because football hasn't started yet. You get back into having more of a routine, more responsibilities. It's hot, but it's like nasty, muggy hot. It's not fun hot. 4th of July, you're kind of, you know, that's too far in the rear view to have any fun from that. August isn't great. The only redeeming thing about August is the golf courses are normally a little more empty because people don't want to golf in that gross, muggy weather. I will. And football's right around the corner. But that's really it.
I hear you. And you know what? August is not great. There again, that's another transition month. I'll say this though: I think Labor Day weekend is awesome if you
that's
celebrate
true.
It right.
Well, that's September.
That is September.
Getting into September,
but you have that to look forward to in
that's
August.
Fair. That's
and
fair.
But I do think there is a part of us, at least you know, in the U.S. where we have school that starts in September, we're conditioned to like dread the start of school likes it.
Not to be that typical tweet that everybody said that a million people sign out every year, but August is the Sunday of months. Like, yeah, it's a day off and you can enjoy it, but there's this impending, like, all right, here we go again, just kind of looming over your head the whole month. It's a relaxing month, definitely. It might be the most relaxing month, but it's just not, again, like June and July are the superior summer months.
If there was like a month in that represented death in the calendar year, it would be August, I think. It's like, all right.
August, or if it wasn't for the NFL playoffs, January. Once the Patriots stop making the playoffs, January is going to be the worst month.
And maybe February. February might be the month.
I think January is even worse because, again, February does have the Super Bowl. In January, you have to deal – like, I actually like part of the winter. I enjoy the holiday season. I like Christmas music. I like how festive everything is. I even enjoy snow during the holiday season. But you know what the worst holiday is? And I think we've done this discussion on the show before. It's New Year's. New Year's blows. So you – boom, you go into New Year's, and then you're just stuck for in a cold month with nothing going on. It's a new year, and you just feel another year older and another year less accomplished, and you have to remember how much fun everything was during the holidays. January, the only thing that saves January is the NFL playoffs.
I don't like
and
the
once
holidays.
My team's not in it, I don't know. I might just punt on January.
I'm not a huge fan of the holidays. I think the holidays are massively
I
overrated.
Am. Maybe, I don't know. I am. Maybe I'm weird like that. I know most people don't like them. Maybe it's because I don't – then again, you're the same way. I don't really have to celebrate Christmas. I don't have that.
Yeah, I don't
think Christmas is pressure. I have no pressure on Christmas, but everything's closed. Normally go to a family friend's house, get a really good meal. I mean, that's it. That's it for me. I love Christmas. I hate New Year's. New Year's sucks.
Yeah, I would. Christmas is nice. You get to go to, you know, eat some Chinese food and whatnot. But the holiday season, I don't know. It's just like, I don't know. I also like, I get seasonal depression because it's like, it's so cold out. You can't go outside.
See, but that doesn't hit me. Up. It doesn't hit me till like January or February. That's the thing.
Yeah,
the Patriots are done.
It's right after New Year's. It's like, all right, we're beyond that. Now you just got to wait it out. Now you got to wait out the winter. And the only consolation is football season, is the playoffs. But imagine, number one, if the Patriots weren't as good as they are. And number two, if we just didn't have football in general, it would be the number one month for suicide, like easily.
I'm just saying February. We should not be saying, oh, we're now in the worst month of March. We should be saying we are finally done with the worst month. That was February. All right, that's going to do it for us this week. We got a lot of good stuff next week. March Madness, actually, wouldn't you know it, is coming up. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be a great year for March Madness this year. Especially, like, I don't think Zion should play again. I mentioned that last week. It's, to me, a wide open field this year. So, good.
Yeah, I haven't paid attention to college basketball all that often. I kind of want to take a moral stance against college sports in general. I know you're a big, big football, college football fan. I hate the charades. You hear these stories constantly about how the NCAA, you know, blocks this player's appearance at a charity event, or just the fact that you can't make money off your own likeness as a damn adult. It is disgusting, and it's a morally corrupt organization. So from a moral standpoint, I don't like it. And I've also never had a rooting interest being in New England. We don't really have a team up here. That said, I'm a hypocrite. I enjoy March Madness. So I'll make a bracket, and I'll try to win some money.
All right, so we'll talk about that coming up. I only hate Sister Jean. I think that whole thing last year was
She's so smug.
She really – and, like, I'm trying to watch basketball. I'm not trying to watch some old nun, but – March Madness, talk about next week. The Combine's going on. We'll try to get to some of that next week as we get closer to the NFL Draft. And, of course, the Bruins, the Celtics, and the Red Sox. You can follow us on Twitter for more at Callin' It Podcast. And check us out online at clnsmedia.com. For Alex Lovitz, I'm Alex Barth. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.